Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Matrix Moments. This is Tarun Davda and today we plan to do a deep dive into one of India's largest industries, which is agriculture and the associated agri-tech disruption that is underway in India. Most of you know we've had over $250 million of growth capital that has been invested into agri-tech startups in 2019 alone. And most of the recipients of that capital are on this panel. So thank you so much again for making it. Several agri-tech business models have seen a rapid scale up over the last few years in India, and this highlights the vast opportunity and further strengthens our thesis on investing in this space. Joining us for this discussion are founders of some of the top agri-tech startups in India today. I'll start with Thiru, co-founder and CEO of NinjaCart, which is one of India's largest tech-driven fresh produce B2B supply chain platforms. Welcome, Thiru. Karthik, president and co-founder at Waycool, an omni-channel fresh produce distribution platform. Thank you again for joining us, Karthik. Really appreciate it. Shashank, founder and CEO of Dehart, an online marketplace for farmers. Shashank, thank you once again for making it. And finally, Shobhit, co-founder of VGrow, a seed stage agri-tech platform, which is focused on aggregating small farms. Thank you again for joining us, Shobhit. Really, really appreciate all of you taking out the time to do this and for sharing your thoughts with us. I'll also introduce my colleagues, Sanjot and Ankush from the Matrix team who oversee our investments in this space. The focus of today's discussion will be on the opportunities and the pitfalls in agri-tech. I think I've had the opportunity to chat with most of you over the last few weeks and actually learn about how you all are thinking about what's happening in this space. Some of the comments have really stuck, so we'll try and deep dive into some of those topics as well in this chat today. So look forward to insights from each of you on your journey and your learnings. And lastly, on the way forward, obviously there's been a bunch of regulations in this space. So look forward to exchanging some thoughts on that as well and how you expect it to play out over the next few years. So with that, I'll hand it over to Sanjot. Sanjot, maybe you can, Sanjot and Ankush both, and we'll look forward to sort of taking this panel forward.
Thanks, Tarun, and welcome again to all the panelists. So I'll quickly go over our sort of outlook on agri-tech in India. And honestly, it's not very dissimilar from other folks and what the folks on the panel have. But it's very hard to overstate the importance of agriculture as an industry in the Indian economy. It's been a largely agrarian society for many, many decades and centuries now. Even today, it's one of the few large economies where a large chunk of the GDP actually comes from agriculture, about 15%. So almost $500 billion is agricultural GDP. And more importantly, almost 40 or actually more than 40% of employment in India comes from agriculture. So not only is it a financially important part of our economy, it's also a very strategically important part of our economy. Now, the issue has been that it's been largely unchanged and undisrupted for decades and arguably centuries. And what's that? What that meant is that India has had a arguably suppressed output, inferior practices to the rest of the world, despite being such a strategically important part of our economy. And it's been riddled with inefficiencies and a broken supply chain, which many folks on this panel are actually trying to solve. So then the question is, if it hasn't changed for so many centuries, why now? Why look at agri-tech as such? And I think the answer is simple. It is the digital India story. Everyone from the farmer to the distributor to the retailer and the end customer is today connected. So the rails for a digital revolution in agriculture have been set. And I think it's folks like the ones on this panel who are making the most of that and creating business models that are truly unique. And that's the other point. I think it's probably the only large sector where India has had the most innovation even compared to the world. I think the business models that have come out of agri-tech are probably at the forefront of the global economy and they're unseen anywhere else in the world. There is no Amazon equivalent in the US for agri. There is no Facebook equivalent. They're actually coming out of India. And that's why I think we're very excited in terms of the market opportunity and the exceptional founders and the business model innovation that's happening in this sector. And speaking of the innovation, I'll hand it over to Ankush.
Great. Thank you, Sanjot. So first of all, Thiru, Karthik, Shashank, Shobhit, it's great to see all of you together on this platform of Matrix Moments. really appreciate you guys taking the time out for this. And you know, one of the key things which we wanted to cover today is your journey of building an agri-tech startup and how an upcoming founder could learn from the same. Right, so in my opinion, and I know all of you would agree, building an agri-tech startup isn't easy. And I can say this from my own experience as well, because I attempted one before joining Matrix. And just to clarify, I'm not saying that building other startup in any other sector is easy, but level of unorganization and non-standardized practices being followed in this space throughout the supply chain is altogether different levels. What it means is that it takes a lot of resilience and on-ground efforts from the founders like you to get things off the ground. So based on your experience, what would be your advice to the upcoming founders? What are the challenges that they should expect? And any tips or hacks which they can use to shorten the cycle to their PMF? And then, you know, just to kickstart, Karthik, do you want to take a stab at it?
I think we should bound the problem a little. There are multiple axes of bounding the problem. You have a product category specialization, you have a channel or end consumer specialization, and you also have a geographic specialization. That's possible. We've chosen to be geographically focused. There may be others who may be picking either a product category or a channel. It's very important to bound the problem, because these are multiple hundred supply chains that we are talking about. Therefore, they are not, it's not one size fits all. And to get a better PMF and to use money more effectively, some access needs to be bound.
Fair enough. I think very well said. Yeah, very well said. I think we need to reduce the number of variables to deal with. Otherwise, there are too many variables to deal with. Agreed. Thiru, what would you add to this? Any other points you would like to add?
If I had to add to it, right, as Karthik said very interestingly, right, we never had this much of understanding when we started it, primarily on, you know, bounding the problem. So we went initially everywhere, like, let's say, for example, just to add to our experience, we initially were like serving a local kirana store, serving a restaurant, serving a big chain of hotels, serving everyone, right? So then finally we figured out serving every customer segment needed a very special supply chain by itself, right? And we were like, we figured out like very early in those days, we were all over the place. And then we had to take a very difficult call of cutting down 40 to 50% of our demand at that time and degrow by 50% to actually decide on one supply chain and say, okay, this is the only thing I'm going to do, okay? And before I excel or crack this, I'm not going to do it. Look at any other thing. So that helped us a lot, actually, to scale is what we felt. So let's say, for example, it's Astatic. They're saying that we are geographically bound. We are actually, you say, we are customer segment bound. So in the sense, local kirana stores, what are the value proposition that we could offer? We went ahead and started building our supply chain to offer that. And who are okay with that value proposition, we're able to serve that. But let's say someone comes and says, I want to have this. And then we say, like, okay, no, sorry, we can't build that for you. This is a very thing. So the biggest learning we carry is that, like, why that comes is like this, right? There are two different types of supply chain. One is high margin customizable supply chain. The other is like a low margin standard supply chain, right? Let's say we believe that vegetables, though people say that it's a very high margin business, but the value per kilogram of vegetable is so low. So even you make very high margin, it doesn't matter. Let's say, if I were to give an example, right? Onion is 10 rupees, for example. And let's say even if you get 40% margin out of it, it's 4 rupees. So it doesn't, so per kilo I make only 4 rupees. So even if I had to transport all the way from X to Y, it doesn't make sense. So in this business, we felt that absolute margin is what matters, and let's say absolute margin per kilogram is what matters, and not really the actual, let's say, the gross margin per sales value. So that is one of the key learning that we got. And once we got that, then we said, okay, I'm not going to, I had to decide whether I'm going in a mass market where I'm not going to customize a supply chain, or I'm going to go behind a niche market or a premium market who's going to pay a premium for some of the value-added things that I'm going to do. To give you an example, right? Some hotels came back and said, hey, I want the cauliflower to be shrink-wrapped, okay? Or I want the leaves, roots to be cut, right? We were initially doing it, and let's say for each customer, there will be a customization that will come, and we are like, okay, to do that. But then as we scale, we figured out we are not able to scale because of this particular reason. Then we said, okay, nothing doing. So let's focus on one supply chain where this is a value proposition I'm going to offer. Anyone who is ready to buy this, let's go and crack them. Otherwise, let's not do. So I could actually relate to what Karthik said, but we didn't have the early wisdom to do that, but we actually learned it by doing it the hard way. So that if someone is coming up, I'll say that, let's say, initially, right, as an entrepreneur, right, you feel like conquering the world is easy, right? This problem, oh, that also I have a solution. That problem, I have a solution for that. Also. This also I can solve, like, you know. Like, when you're small, every problem is solvable, right? In a small scale, solving every problem is possible also, right? You are a group of 10 people who can work, like, 20 hours a day and keep pulling it off. But let's say, as if you have to do that across 200 people, 1,000 people, right? It's literally not possible. There are definitely the constraints. So scale teaches you that. With experience, maybe people learn that. But when we did, we didn't have that. So we learned in the hard way.
Sure. Shobhit, I could see the smile on your face when Thiru said, you know, when you're young, you think that you can solve all the problems. So I'll come to that. But you know, before coming to that, Shashank, would you mind sharing your point of view, given that you have been in this space for the longest, I think, if I'm not wrong. You started Farms and Farmers in 2012, and it's been a long journey and a long grind for sure. What's your take on the challenges and the key sort of, you know, watch outs for the upcoming founders?
Yeah, so I think in our case, the trigger point was somehow, in my case, I was doing consulting in supply chain. So I had some exposure of one end of food chain because I had got chance to work with many retail chain and FMCG players. I usually come from rural background. So anyways, or always I had exposure of another end of food chain, which was the farmer side. So somehow could not understand the gap between the value chain. And that was the trigger point. But I totally resonate with what Thiru and Karthik said that, like, for example, I still remember in our case, the first thought was that, hey, it's very simple. I mean, let's go to village, let's aggregate different produce and we'll sell it to the bigger market. It was as simple as that. Yeah. I think we were fortunate that we could go to ground zero. I think I strongly believe that. I think that was one of the most fortunate moment or decision we have taken, that, you know, that the moment we decided to get into ag, very next day, we saw ourselves in some village of Bihar. And I think that changed the whole perspective. Then I think very soon we realized that was this market linkage, that's not the only problem, right? I mean, to any individual farmer in India, their actual problem begins in the beginning of season itself. Because if you're planning to aggregate any vegetable or rice, then you will realize that in same village, 10 different farmers are growing 6 different varieties of same crop and following 5 other different agricultural practices, how you will aggregate. And then that's how our journey started, right? So I always say that in case of Dehat, the journey has been bottom up with respect to time. I mean, things evolved. I would say still it has been evolving. But yes, the problem statement, what we are trying to solve now at Dehat is that any individual farmer in India, they have multiple agricultural requirements. And for all these multiple agricultural requirements, they have to rely upon different people. So the idea is very simple, how we can bring everything under one roof as well. But yeah, the problem or rather louder thought and suggestion, again, is nothing right and wrong, right? We all would agree. Like for any entrepreneur, everything is right, everything is wrong. It's very subjective. But I always say that in agri, to any entrepreneur, and all entrepreneurs are ambitious, we have to be, the best part of agri sector is that there are too many things to do. Right, that's the best part. And probably I think that could be one of the most common trigger point in case of any agri entrepreneur, that there are too many things to do. But I always say that the worst part is the same, that there are too many things to do. Right. So we always get confused that, you know, that, or like we always get inspired that, all right, let's do this too, and it looks like you can do everything. But of course, that's not the case, right? Something what Thiru said too. So having a strong focus, I think that's very important. Maybe what Karthik said, that focus on category, focus on geography. For example, in our case, we focus on one geography, right? We focus, like in our case, the overall approach is service agnostic, right? We work with input, output, advisory, everything. but we remained focused to one geography, right? And then going forward, we started replicating. So I think that focus, again, that's based on my experience. I believe that that's important. The second, and I think another important learning or the skill we could develop is the patience, right? You're talking about a sector where your so-called TAT is 4 to 5 months, right? Because that's the average crop cycle, right? Whatever model you have, whether you are working on input or financing or tech or aggregation, you have to go through the same cropping cycle of 4 to 5 months. If something goes wrong and that's not completely your fault, probably you'll have to wait for another season. So I think the patience is something which is very much needed in this space. I think two louder thought from my side, Ankush, on your question.
Got it. I think that's really helpful. So Shobhit, moving on to you, and you know, I have a slightly different question for you, given that you just started. How did you go about, and you know, first of all, I think you should also talk about, you know, what your interpretation of all the good advice which you are getting from other panelists. That is one. And second is, how did you go about finding the opportunity, given that, like, you know, all these heavy hitters in the space already? How did you sort of, you know, go about that? This is a specific niche I want to play in. As Karthik spoke about, you know, geography cut, product cut, customer segment cut. Which cut did you go after, and why is WeGrow different from all the players that are out there in the market?
Great. So thanks, Ankush. So first of all, as you said, right, I think we are still very, very early stage, and a lot of insights are actually inputs for us as well. But I think, fortunately, I think you know, the founders had, I would say, decent exposure in the agri value chain in our you know, job and in our careers in the past. So from ITC Agri, and that kind of really gives you a good opportunity to work on ground, and we kind of manage a lot of crops, we build a lot of supply chains. And I think I did a very similar mistake when I was at ITC, I remember, in my first, second year, whereas engineers, and I'm an engineer, right? So as engineers, it's really a formula that works in the end, right? A plus B will give you CD, and you try to kind of put that equation and work out in the farm. But as everyone said, the vagaries are so different. The psyche of farmer comes into picture. There's so much of subjectivity involved. It's not always very objective. And that kind of trains you and teaches you that, you know, you need to really trim down and focus. And I think somewhere I got that experience a little bit, I would say, at farming at ITC, and then I was in sales. So I got the same experience in the marketplace itself. So I totally aligned on that. And I think we've been very cautious about it. I'm not sure we've done the best job. I think time will show that. But I think we've been very cautious on trimming down our scope. So for instance, currently there are two types of, we've scoped down in two different ways. One, we very really scoped down in the place in the value chain we play a role. So for instance, the two decisions that were made, one is that we will not be a big portfolio company, right? So we will always trim down our products. So we will not have 200 SKUs ever. And we'll always work in few SKUs. So what that does typically for us is, we can never play in the field where some of the biggies in this industry are playing, right? We can never sell to end consumers because they want the portfolio. We can never play in the end retailer or end you know, push cart segment, because all of them want a portfolio and I cannot deliver. But what we realized is, if you take one product itself, there's a lot of opportunities if you get into it. For instance, you know, as a farmer, if I think that I'm a farmer and I'm growing a product, say pomegranate or apples or anything, and if I have to really make money out of it, I really need to do two things. The first thing is, I really connect to the best marketplace possible. And you have to understand that as a farmer, obviously organized space is probably 20 to 30% of what I grow. But I really sell a bulk of it even today to the super unorganized tier two, tier three markets. And I actually depend on many people there. So as a farmer, if I think, how do I actually understand the different marketplaces for everything that I grow, and how I maximize my profit there? So that's a key piece. And that's where I believe we play slightly different to many other players. When we're trying to organize, I would say, different types of marketplace in the market for a given product. And that works because we're working with demand aggregators, right? There are big players who we're already working with, and there are also a lot of small individual players historically working whom we support, right? So that's where we play a role. Very different to the, I would say, role that is being played by many biggies. The second thing is, as a farmer, if I think again, the mindset is that I'm a farmer, I need to know that I need to make my farming more profitable and simple. Right? It's too complex for me in my mind. There's a weather, then there's some credit that I have to get from someone else. There's thousands of input companies coming and telling my product is better. I depend on someone. Agronomy, things are changing. Someone comes. It's so complex for me in my mind. So if I think myself as a farmer, there are a lot of things that I can actually support, you know, myself with, which is, you know, first is obviously the marketplace, but there's also a lot of other services like agronomy, in terms of the best practices, in terms of credit financing, inputs, and long-term, obviously, you know, customized mechanization and things like that. I think that's the role we play. And typically what we see ourselves is, rather than, you know, competing with some of the big players, I think we are a very good synergistic partner. Because in reality, getting backward integration and contract farming for 200 SKUs is very difficult. And we all spoke about scoping. So obviously, there will be two or three, you know, lines that people can work on. But we kind of do not work on the core big products like a potato and tomato per se, right? So we have said that that's something which big players will always work and we can't enter. How about the balance of the products? And we're there, and when we come in, we work as a farmer and we kind of work with multiple organized players and also semi-organized. And that's where our scope is. So I think some way we do not compete with existing big players. I think we have a different role to play. And that's why we felt a lot of opportunities also there, because the underutilization is significant. And that might help us in unit economics and things like that, which is very important in an agri sector, where you look at unit economics together with scaling. So that's why we
got it. Yeah. Got it. I think fair enough. So you're saying there's an additional cut, which is the, where in the supply chain are you playing? You are playing more towards the farm side, whereas the other players are playing more towards the customer side. Is that correct understanding?
Correct. Understand.
Would love to hear from Karthik and Thiru, if in case they sort of, you know, are by this argument of, you know, another cut, which is, you know, where do you play in the supply chain, and do you agree with the end state vision of the supply chain which Shobhit described, or do you have any other thoughts?
I can chip in. I think I completely agree. In fact, that's an axis I missed out. And it's a very, very valid point, and that we have to pick which part of that supply chain we need to operate in. And it's not, it doesn't stop there. It's also extending into how we can collaborate for making sure the full loop is addressed. So we have, in the last year, started working with many of our fellow startups in helping the farmer with inputs and advisory rather than doing everything ourselves. We're working with a small startup that does in situ soil health testing, for example, for the farmers. We work with another that does optical grading of produce and so on. So it doesn't make sense for us to, you know, introduce soil health as a feature or, lending as a feature equivalent, right? It doesn't make sense for us to do that. I think what we're doing is hard enough as it is. Therefore, completely agree that we should pick which part of the supply chain we choose to operate in. We choose to operate in the demand connection piece. We do have extensions on the way in the back, but we orchestrate that rather than operate the extensions, such as going into inputs and things.
Sincerely, thank you, everybody. This has been excellent. Actually, big learning for all of us, I guess, with some of the points you have made, and also for all the young founders who are sort of watching this. So thank you once again. Really, really appreciate it.